Blog Talk Radio.
Live and based from Memphis, Tennessee, this is Grizzly Bear Blues Live, hosted by Joe Mullinax.
The mind of the master, the prime poet designed for disaster, a crime candidate, the light heavyweight. I might levitate right through the heaven's gate. Rhymes record break neck spines and vertebrae. Step on the plane like Kanye, I heard him say it's murder one when he murder tracks. I'm a dirtbag flirting with songbirds and Birkin bags. My first rap catch Roberta Flack. I'm a certified Mac, but I'm sure you ain't heard of that. Slim Thug and them hoes, they been loving the flow. They been hunting for men like In Vogue. And I'm in season, the season vet. I don't need respect, all I need is a check. Might check.
I really think it might be in the best interest of everyone involved, everybody listening to the show, whether it's the live broadcast on Blog Talk Radio or the podcast, however you're taking in this program, this fine day, evening, whatever it might be, I just need for everyone to just whew, exhale, because it was kind of crazy there for about an hour or so as the trade deadline came and went, and as the dust settled and the smoke cleared, the Memphis Grizzlies stayed put, and the grand consensus was that's what they needed to do, and that's what we will talk about and more on the latest episode of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. I am sadly producerless tonight. Chip Williams is not able to be with us this evening, but Chip is here with us in spirit as always, and I carry on the show along with that spirit in mind. Of course, we have our wonderful guest in the first segment, the great Chris Faulkner, the managing editor of Grizzly Bear Blues. He is with us for this evening for the first segment, and Chris, it really is just an amazing, amazing day when you can look at the, and you made a tremendous chart that people should check out on the site, grizzlybearblues.com. Almost half of the NBA, Chris, was involved in a trade today. Almost half of the NBA!
It was fun. It was a fun little chunk of time there. I'm thankful that I actually check Twitter happenstance right when it all kind of started really heating up there right before the deadline. But yeah, my goodness, that was just about everyone you can think of. Although when you look at it, for a lot of it, it's essentially just a bunch of bad teams swapping mediocre players around and draft picks. But there were some pretty big moves, and definitely some moves that affect the Grizzlies and the Western Conference. So, man, yeah, it's a lot to digest, but like you said, the chart's up, and that's a place to start to break down what went down, because the landscape's changed a little bit, Joe.
And there are two moves in particular that I think drastically affect the Memphis Grizzlies, even though it didn't involve them on this day. In terms of a transaction, and we'll talk more about those with you, Chris, and then also with our next guest on the show at about, it'll be 7 o'clock Central Time. It'll be 8 on the East Coast for those listening to the live program. We'll talk with Kevin Leip about that as well. But there's a ton to get to tonight. We're going to make sure that we get to it as quickly as we can. First things first, that was Chris Faulkner's voice. He's the managing editor of GrizzlyBearBlues.com. He will be the guest in the Grizzly Bear News segment, along with myself, talking about the greatest and latest articles up on GrizzlyBearBlues.com. We will get to that here momentarily. The next segment, as I said, Kevin Leip, the former managing editor of GrizzlyBearBlues.com. He now runs the Memphis Flyers Beyond the Arc blog. I will give him a hard time for their tagline and their promotion of Kevin Don't Bluff, mostly because I am jealous of that. Chris, I think that we need a Joe Don't Bluff banner at some point on the Grizzly Bear Blues website. But I'll lobby for that a little bit more later. Kevin's going to join us. We're going to talk about that trade deadline, how it affects the Grizzlies a little bit more in depth. We're going to talk about the Grizzlies, for lack of a better word, putrid three-point shooting heading into the All-Star break. It actually coincides with the 16 games that Jeff Green was a member of the Grizzlies. I don't know if that's happy coincidence or not, But we'll talk about the struggles of the Grizzlies shooting. We'll obviously talk about Marc Gasol in the All-Star game last week, how that went for Mark. It sounds like he might have brought a bug back with him from Brooklyn. But we'll talk about that as well, of course. And then in the final segment, we're excited to have Douglas and Joseph Real of Real Talk Draft. It's going to be a real-time draft, excuse me. We're excited to have them on. They'll talk about what their site is as you head into NBA draft time in the next few months. Just kind of looking ahead for the for college basketball season and March Madness, kind of looking at the Grizzlies situation and who some players might be that could be Grizzlies draft picks heading into next year. Of course, this year has to complete before we get there, but it never hurts to look ahead, especially in a week where there were no Memphis Grizzlies games. So the Real Brothers will join me from realtimedraft.com. I will talk to them in the final segment of the show. We will have Kevin Leip in the second segment of the show, but first, it will be Grizzly Bear News with Chris Faulkner. And before we get to the Grizzly Bear News of the day, let me remind you how you can get in touch with the program. You can follow us on Twitter, at GBBLive. Please do so. We want this show to be as interactive as possible. I am on Twitter, at Joe Mullinax. You can follow our managing editor, Chris Faulkner, who joins us every week in the Grizzly Bear News segment, at Faulkner Memphis. And you can follow our producer, Chip Williams, who is not with us this evening, at Chip Williams Jr. The chat room is also open. Please be sure to go into the chat as you listen to the live broadcast. Interact with me there. I'm running the chat this evening, and I'll be happy to take any questions that you might have for our guests or for myself, or if you just want to add to the conversation, please do so. Now, Chris, speaking of conversation, even in a week where you supposedly think it's a longer trade deadline, or excuse me, it's a longer All-Star break, the game's over, the guys have a few extra days off, maybe it'll be a little bit lighter on GrizzlyBearBlues.com, there's been some interesting takes and interesting articles that have come out along the way.
Yeah, we started the week off looking at the remaining candidates for Grizzlies' backup power forward, you know, if they're going to indeed find that in the open market. That was after Amari Stoudemire was, you know, essentially decided to go to the Mavericks. And we also had five reasons to jump on the Grizzlies bandwagon from Mr. Rubrum, which, you know, it's a perfect time because I think the Grizzlies are about to embark on a very nice win streak. I think they're going to come out very focused out of the break, and better to get on now than after they, you know, get really hot going into March and April, and then you'll look even worse than you would now jumping on the bandwagon, to be honest. And I also posted a little bit about Mike Conley's rise to the role of Captain Clutch. I found it a little interesting trend in Mike's clutch statistics over the last four seasons, and clutch stats being how the player performs in the last 5 minutes of a game that is decided by 5 points or less. And you got to check it out because it tells the story of Mike Conley and, you know, what he's become for the Grizzlies. And we also had another D-League update from Marco Wallace. The D-League also has their All-Star game at over the same period that the NBA does. So there's some highlights from there. They actually had a dunk contest that honestly was pretty similar to the NBA's by all counts. There's one player that essentially ran away with it with some, you know, pretty nice moves. And we had a roundtable post yesterday getting the opinions on various GBB staff about, you know, what's going on here at the break and what the Grizzlies are looking at going forward. And also, Joe, you and Matt still have a conversation going on up on the site. It's still going to be pinned up at the top. You guys are kind of digging through some of the subtle notes of the break here, and if you want to highlight some of the points that you and Matt have hit on to lead us into the next segment.
Well, we've taken a look, Matt and I enjoy doing these reply all chats with Matt because, you know, he has a great, great opinion most of the time, even if I don't necessarily agree with it all the time. I appreciate the way that he argues for himself, and I appreciate the logic that goes into his points. And it also, whenever you speak with someone, whether it's on Twitter or whether on blog or whatever, even real life, you know, it doesn't just need to be electronic debate. But whenever there's somebody who disagrees with you, it makes you question your own beliefs and either makes them stronger or makes you appreciate the other perspective. So I enjoy doing these segments with Matt. And we were talking about one thing in particular as you get to the unofficial second half of the 2014-2015 NBA season. I say unofficial because the Grizzlies only have 29 games left. The official halfway point would have been 41. But as they enter this sprint to the finish line, and it really is starting out with a bang, 5 games in 7 days coming up, you look at what the Grizzlies have in front of them, and you start looking at playoff matchups, and you look at the trade deadline today, and there's teams that you want to avoid at all costs, in my opinion. And for the Memphis Grizzlies, those are twofold. You've got the Oklahoma City Thunder, who got better today, which is terrifying. Enes Kanter, Kyle Singler, DJ Augustine going to Oklahoma City makes them much more dangerous offensively, in my opinion. And they're probably going to be the best 8 seed in the history of the NBA playoffs. So you're looking at trying to avoid the 1 seed in Oklahoma City, and you're looking at trying to avoid the 4 or 5 matchup because that's more than likely with the possible regression of the Los Angeles Clippers due to Blake Griffin's injury, where the San Antonio Spurs are going to end up. And you don't want to mess with the Spurs. The Spurs are healthy. They're the defending champs. You avoid them as long as you possibly can. So there's an opening for the Grizzlies that could harken back to 2 years ago when they had a nice little opportunity due to injury that time to get to the Western Conference Finals and have a run at the NBA Championship. This time, it's the lay of the land, the luck of the draw. The Memphis Grizzlies could potentially be able to avoid the top seeded Golden State Warriors, who I don't think the Grizzlies are going to be able to catch from the 2 seed to the 1. They could avoid Golden State. They could avoid San Antonio if they get to that 4 or 5 seed. And they could avoid Oklahoma City because unless they go some ridiculous, 25-5, which is possible, I guess, but it's going to be hard for them to get out over the 8 seed. You could avoid all 3 of those monster teams on one side of the bracket until the Western Conference Finals. And that would mean the Grizzlies would have to deal with the likes of the Los Angeles Clippers, the Portland Trail Blazers, and potentially the Houston Rockets or somebody like that instead of those 3 monsters. So it's laying out nicely for the Grizzlies, and that's really been one topic of conversation. Now, granted, things have to fall into place. That's just kind of the probability, at least through my eyes at this point, how it could work out. If the Grizzlies wind up in that 2-3 seed range, they've really got a shot at making another run at this thing, even if everybody's healthy, because they wouldn't have to worry about the Spurs, they wouldn't have to worry about the Warriors, and they wouldn't have to worry about the Thunder until the Western Conference Finals. And whichever one of those 3 teams makes it out of that gauntlet is probably going to be a little bit tired.
Yeah, and with how the Grizzlies are stacked this year and how they're running, you would just love to see them get at least an easy first round matchup, maybe even a sweep on someone, just so that they can really, really lay it down on the next team if they have to, or, they're going to have to summon a lot of firepower for the Western Conference Finals if they make it there. Regardless of who it's against, because it's going to be a team that can, score 120 points in 4 quarters. So it'll be interesting. It's with the way the West is and has become even more so now today, the last week or two of the season could potentially, really shake things up, regardless of what Memphis does, last season was a really exciting finish, Joe, and I think we're going to have another one this season, even if it's not Memphis playing for their own advancement in seeding, but they could be playing for posturing in some other sort of strategy.
when there's a race, and there's a race for history here, Chris, and there's something to be said for regular season success. You know, I am one of the loudest proponents of saying, you know, you got to win a championship. You got to win a championship. We talked about that with Chris Vernon last week, and Jeff Calkins the week before from 92.9 ESPN. You know, I am one of the biggest and loudest screamers at the sky of championship or bust. But you also have to take a moment, and this is the beginning of a change of philosophy here, not completely, because I still believe, you know, winning is that's what's fun at the end of the day, is winning a championship. That's what you know, the banners fly forever, that kind of philosophy. I do subscribe to that to an extent. But these Grizzlies have a chance to win the Southwest Division, which once again would be a banner. For the first time in the history of the Southwest Division, it's been owned by the Spurs and, you know, the Mavericks here and there. Grizzlies have never won it. They have a real chance at doing that. The Grizzlies have a chance at having the best regular season record in their history. That's something that should be chased and should be proud of. There's a lot of regular season things that can make life easier heading into the postseason. If they hold on to that 2 or 3 seed, and let's just, once again, this is presumptions here, but looking at the playoffs, if they fall the way that I am thinking that they will, and you've got Golden State at the 1 seed, Memphis Grizzlies at the 2. Say you put Portland at the 3 because they got better today with Aaron Aflalo. Maybe the Spurs at the 4, Dallas at the 5. That would put Houston at the 6. Maybe the Clippers at 7, Oklahoma City Thunder at the 8. But let's put that out, lay that out there. Let's say that's how it lays out and works out. That means that the Memphis Grizzlies would have home court advantage for at least the first 2 rounds of the NBA playoffs. That would be huge. The Grindhouse of FedEx Forum has really become a tremendous, tremendous place for these Grizzlies to play and take advantage of other teams. And then, say the Warriors get quote-unquote upset by the Oklahoma City Thunder, which would not be a stretch at all. You would possibly see the Thunder being picked in that series if it happened. Well, guess who has home court advantage throughout the rest of through the rest of the West now? It would be the Grizzlies. So it really does, if they take care of their business, and that is where all of this comes from. It's hard to assume that they're going to be able to do that because of the layout of the West, and because even their first 2 weeks back from the break, Chris, and I'll talk to Kevin Lipo about this a little bit more, especially the first 5 games, they're at Portland on Sunday. They got the Clippers on Monday, back-to-back. They're at Sacramento on Wednesday. Then they play the Clippers again, in one of the last, and actually the last home game of February on Friday night. And then they have the Minnesota Timberwolves, who beat the Grizzlies the last time they met, in Minnesota. And that's going to be Kevin Garnett back. And, you know, you have no idea what you're going into in Minnesota anymore with Garnett returning. So those first 5 games, and then after that you've got Utah, you're at Houston. You know, there's no cupcakes coming up, and these Grizzlies have to keep winning if they want to keep the position that they've earned to this point through their play in the regular season.
Yeah, they do have a decent little cushion. I mean, it's not really a cushion, but it's a nice little lead to, you know, that they worked for back in November, that they can play with, because they, you know, typically not had the best months of March the past few years. They tend to heat back up, I guess, late March and into April. The extra rest is probably going to help them a little bit. You know, teams are starting back tonight. I mean, the Thunder are playing tonight. Without, you know, two of their regular rotation guys. And the Grizzlies have until Sunday, so it's a little more time to work in some plays for Jeff Green. That's a little more time to perhaps evaluate Vince Carter and see, you know, see if he's going to be helping us sooner or later, and if there's something that they, you know, can do that last roster spot to make up for that. I think they're going to be ready because they let off the pedal going into the break. We know that. We kind of saw that happen the last week. Because I think they know that it is a sprint, like you said, Joe, and they're going to come out like a sprinter on the track.
They need to, and hopefully they will. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. I am without my producer tonight, Chip Williams. Shout out to Chip. But we're making it work. We're going to go ahead and keep on powering through, and we have Chris Faulkner here as our guest, as we always do in the first segment of Grizzly Bear News on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Now, Chris, you mentioned your article that you did this weekend. It was a great article. People should absolutely go check it out on Mike Conley as Captain Clutch. Grizzlies come back Sunday. They play at Portland. And as I said, the schedule is not welcome to them this first week back. It really isn't going to be easy. And they're facing a Portland team that will more than likely have Aaron Aflalo ready to go. He'll be in coming off the bench, one would assume. You know, and he strengthens that bench scoring unit. Now, thankfully for the Grizzlies, Kosta Kupas was not moved today. So you still have a tremendous defensive bench group of Tony Allen, Nick Calathes, and Kosta Kupas. So that advantage maybe is negated a bit when it comes to that matchup. But these Grizzlies are going into some tough places to play these next few games. They really are going to have to start hot, and it really is going to come down to Mike Conley playing better than he did before the All-Star break. Now, his ankles were messed up. He wasn't playing at full strength there for a while. The grind of the NBA season is a real thing. There's no doubt about that, and Mike Conley knows that all too well. Hopefully, he is healed up, he's gotten some good rest, and he's ready to go because the Memphis Grizzlies are going to need him at full strength if they're going to hold on to these 2 and 3 seeds, or 2 or 4 or 3 seed, excuse me, in the Western Conference.
Yeah, they need that guy that makes everyone mad about him getting snubbed from the All-Star team. That's the player that made the Grizzlies look so powerful and daunting earlier in the season. You know, the injuries have hampered him, but he should have had plenty of time now over the break to hopefully get healthy. And the Grizzlies have the point guards to support Mike now, to where he can hopefully really, you know, take charge and be as aggressive as he needs to be for the Grizzlies to, you know, really stomp on some teams and hang with the higher scoring teams. And Nikolaitis and Bane Udrov should allow Dave Yeager to, you know, put Mike in positions to give, you know, maximum effort without giving much up, you know, when people have to spell him and run the offense. That being said, though, Joe, it's not all up to Mike as far as improvements. One, Courtney Lee also has to step up for the Grizzlies starting unit. I know we're counting on Vince Carter to eventually come back and do some things, especially from long range. But, you know, Vince, as far as this season goes, he never really did anything to begin with. Like, our success in November, that amazing start, that was due to the shooting from Courtney Lee, not Vince Carter. He's looked gun-shy in the past month. His attempts from three are down. Yeah, I think he was taking close to 3.5 a game earlier in the season. He's down to around 2 per game now. And, you know, either that's affecting his rhythm or he's just in a slump because he's shooting horribly in the month of February. 25%, just, you know, 1 out of 4 shots are going in for Courtney right now. And he hasn't been playing in sync with the team either. He's just looked off. His assists are down as well. He's got only averaging 1 assist per game compared to, you know, 2 or more, I think he was averaging from most of the rest of the season. So he's not... I don't know if it's something that Yeager's changed in the roles or, you know, if it's just a part of the season and the ebb and the flow of things. His BER is down to, you know, 12.78. That's, you know, that's not what the Grizzlies are looking for from Courtney, you know.
You're listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax, and we are speaking with the managing editor of GrizzlyBearBlues.com, Chris Faulkner, in his Grizzly Bear News segment, as we do every week here on the program. Follow Chris on Twitter at Faulkner Memphis. And Chris, you make an interesting point about Courtney Lee, and not every other day, it feels that way sometimes, but I get into arguments about Jeff Green a lot. And the argument today on Twitter involving Jeff Green was, you know, they looked at, or people looked at the package that Portland sent for Aaron Aflalo, which the trade itself was Aaron Aflalo and Alonzo G. And Portland shipped out a first-round pick, a second-round pick. They sent Will Barton of Memphis Tiger fame, Thomas Robinson, who they're eventually going to buy out, and Victor Claver. And people were saying that, you know, that package wasn't as good as the first-round pick, the Tayshaun Prince expiring contract, and Quincy Pondexter that the Grizzlies gave up, essentially, in the three-team deal with Boston and New Orleans. And the thing that I struggle with, Chris, is that Jeff Green was never brought in to be a catch-and-shoot three-point specialist. That was not the reason he was brought into the Memphis Grizzlies. You can agree or disagree with the logic behind what they did. But the bottom line is they wanted a bigger wing because there wasn't one on the roster not named Tayshaun Prince. They wanted a guy who was athletic. They wanted a longer wing who could defend multiple positions, a guy who could maybe eat some of those John Lewis stretch 4 minutes if necessary. They were looking for a guy who could be versatile and attack the rim and be aggressive in transition. That was the major reason they brought him in. And the glaring weakness of Jeff Green's game, which in all fairness is his shooting, becomes that much more obvious when you have issues with Mike Conley and Courtney Lee shooting the basketball. Those are your two guys that you're depending on to be your floor spacers, okay? That starting lineup, and people have argued for Tony Allen coming in instead of Jeff Green and having Green come off the bench. Well, you have even less shooters on the floor with Jeff Green if he's coming off the bench. Mike Conley and Courtney Lee are your guys that you're asking to convert from range. If they're not hitting those shots, the offense is going to be off, and it affects Jeff Green because he doesn't have the space that he should normally have. So is Jeff Green innocent in those shooting struggles? No, he's not. But at the same time, that's not what he's asked to do. That is what Mike Conley and Courtney Lee are asked to do, and they have to pick it up if these Grizzlies are going to have success. Oh, and by the way, as I've talked about on the site with Matt in our reply all chat, the Grizzlies were 13-3, shooting 29% from three. So they're a team that doesn't necessarily depend on the three-point shot to be successful, but if they want to win an NBA championship, which everybody says is the goal, they need to start converting those shots and forcing teams like the San Antonio Spurs to respect them from range.
And they not only do they need to make them themselves, they need to defend the three as well, which they've kind of had problems with this year. What's the deal there? Why is that seemingly an issue that's been kind of perpetuating for months now, just like the lack of three-point shooting on the offensive side has been?
I think a lot of it has to do with scheme. After watching this team as much as I have, they're very much interested in shutting down strong side penetration, strong side offensive movement. So if you have a team that understands how to kick the ball and work it around the perimeter, they're going to find an open shooter at some point. I think that that's part of it. I also think that part of it is just, I don't want to say laziness, but a reluctance to fight through screens. And Jeff Green, once again, I am a supporter of Jeff Green. I think he's a good piece for this Grizzlies team moving forward. But he doesn't always go through screens. He goes under them a good bit. And that gives teams and guys that shouldn't have open three-point opportunities chances at open three-point opportunities. You have to force alterations on the shot. And the Grizzlies don't do that consistently, in particular Jeff Green. Tony Allen, to his credit, does this a good bit, fighting through those screens, using that energy on the defensive end. You know, it's not sexy to be that guy who, oh, I fight through a bunch of screens. You know, that's not something that the average fan would say, oh, you fought through all those screens, you're great. But you can appreciate that effort and that attention to detail, and that is how you win basketball games, especially in April, May, and June, with that energy on the defensive end of the court. The Grizzlies don't consistently give it, but at the same time, maybe it's a conscious thing and they're trying to save themselves. I'm not sure. It has been a lot more obvious this year than it has been in the past, Chris. It's something that needs to be paid attention to, in addition to getting the offensive engines going of Courtney Lee and Mike Conley.
It's definitely a chink in the armor, at least for the Grizzlies defensively. And, you know, with the amount of time that teams put into film study and developing strategies to exploit weaknesses, it's something that they can't go into April still having that problem. And they definitely can't go into the playoffs having that problem, because I guarantee you, whoever they face in pretty much two out of the three rounds, if not all three rounds of the Western Conference playoffs, are going to be loaded with shooters that can, you know, shoot 30 of them and make over 15 of those 30 in a game. So unless the Grizzlies want to revert back to more of that offense that we saw in the beginning of the year, which, you know, depending on how they look health-wise coming out, we could hopefully see another boost in offense like we saw coming out the gate, especially from Marc Gasol, although, you know, it sucks that he's got the little bug coming back from the All-Star game, but as long as his knees and legs are fine, I'm not worried about it. He's going to, you know, soldier through for that. But, yeah, it should be fun, man. There's a lot for other teams to figure out after you know, all the trades that went down. But the Grizzlies, for the most part, know what they're going to do. Now they just have to figure out how they're going to do it and practice. But a quote from the legendary John Wooden, don't mistake activity with achievement. And, you know, the Internet allows for, I think, days like today to happen now with the amount of information that you can gather and send and acquire instantaneously now. You can obviously pull off a lot of trades within a very short period of time. But that doesn't mean that teams are necessarily better. It'll be interesting to see the Thunder and how they could sort of incorporate their new pieces. But there's a lot of human elements here, and, you know, you can always look, say you got better on paper, but it's never going to be that simple. And the Grizzlies have a special chemistry, and even though, you know, some people might be disappointed that they didn't make a move today of some sort, but there's plenty of reasons to be excited about this team. And honestly, if you just look at it, they did their big move weeks ago acquiring Jeff Green. So if you just think about, like, the Grizzlies acquired Jeff Green today, you can probably sleep better tonight.
That's true. They made their move. They've had some time to get him acclimated. And the nice thing about the extra time heading into Sunday against the Trailblazers is that the couple of extra practices that the Grizzlies won't be able to have next week due to all of the travel and games that they have coming right out of the break. So this is an opportunity for the Grizzlies to really get some work in integrating Jeff into the offense. Marc Gasol knows that offense like the back of his hand. To be honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised if he just had a cold and they were giving him a couple extra days off since he had to work the All-Star break. Mark will be fine. I would be surprised if he missed anything more than one game. To be honest with you, I'd be surprised if he missed any games. I think it's going to be shot out of the gate, especially with that game, that first one being against the Portland Trailblazers. That's an important, important game in terms of tiebreakers. Chris Faulkner, as always, it was wonderful to talk to you during the segment. Much appreciated. We look forward to having you on next week.
Appreciate it, man. Soldier on by yourself, and hopefully we get Chip back for you next week to anchor down with you.
I appreciate that, and I'll make it through. I'll get it done. I do miss my producer, but we're going to make it work. Chris Faulkner, thank you.
I know you will, bud.
That was Chris Faulkner, managing editor of GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Follow him on Twitter, @ Faulkner Memphis. Some great takes there. I love the John Wooden quote. He's one of my favorite coaches of all time, regardless of sport. Don't mistake activity with achievement. That's excellent. And that's true. Just because you make a trade doesn't mean you're instantly better. You can tell that to a lot of teams that are out there. Some teams I think are better. Oklahoma City and Portland are two that we're going to talk about here with Kevin Leip here in a moment. But first, audibletrial.com/GrizzlyBearBlues. Want to make sure we give them a shout out for their wonderful sponsorship of this program. What do you get when you sign up for audible.com using the URL audibletrial.com/backslash HGTV and me, I guess. www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. What do you get when you sign up for that? Well, you get an audiobook download and membership to audible.com, which is powered by amazon.com. Over 150,000 audiobook titles to choose from. You can download them as an MP3, burn them onto a CD, put them into the cloud, wherever that may be. Lots of opportunities for you to utilize this technology so that you don't have to sit and read the words of a book if you don't have the time. Maybe you're taking a long trip. You can just listen to the story as you go. You sign up for www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. You get that audiobook download for just signing up and paying the membership fee to get started. You have access to all those titles. You can download books whenever you want. You don't have to wait. Plus, using that fee that the Grizzly Bear Blues Live gets from your signing up, we are going to make a donation. We're going to do it here in the next few weeks to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee, a remarkable organization that ensures that children who are facing life-threatening ailments in their families do not have to pay for their treatment and lodging while they're fighting the diseases in their time in Memphis. That's an amazing thing so that they can focus on their health and getting better. We here at Grizzly Bear Blues Live want to be a part of that. Help us get to that point. Get yourself a great deal through audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues and get an amazing, amazing opportunity to help the good folks at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. My next guest this evening is the main blogger, the proprietor, if you will, the guy who runs the Memphis Flyer Beyond the Arc blog. He certainly does not bluff, if you believe the advertising for the site. He's the former managing editor of grizzlybearblues.com. He brought me on as one of his last acts to grizzlybearblues.com, so you can either thank him or scorn him for bringing me onto the site. He is a mentor of mine. He's a friend of mine. I'm happy to have him back on the show. His name is Kevin Light. Kevin, good evening, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm good, man. How are you?
You know, if I were any better, Kevin, I really couldn't stand it. You know, it's an interesting situation, kind of sitting back and looking. I was telling Chris in the first segment, almost half of the NBA made some sort of deal today before the trade deadline. It was a pretty active deadline, but it was refreshing for a change for the Grizzlies to be able to sit back and say, you know what, I think we're good.
Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter, and you know, this has already been said, I mean, the Grizzlies were done making huge moves when they made the Jeff Green trade. They did that ahead of the deadline. You know, I think he was the guy on their list that they could actually get. We know that they called about Luol Deng and were kind of turned away there. I know a couple others that they called about that kind of didn't come through, or just, you know, flat out got told no. So once they kind of settled on Jeff Green as their guy, that just kind of made it happen. And that's not unusual for the Grizzlies to do that kind of thing. That's really what happened with the Courtney Lee deal last year, too. Looking forward to free agency, you had a guy in Jared Bayless who you didn't expect to have back. You didn't expect him to pick up that option. And he probably didn't expect to pick it up either until Lionel Hollins got sent on his way. But, you know, so they made that move for Courtney Lee, and then instead of having to sign a guy to that kind of contract, you know, they're making the bet that Courtney Lee is better than the guy who they would have had to pay that money. So, you know, I think we've seen the Grizzlies do this more than once. They make a smart move kind of in advance of the deadline and take the pressure off themselves to not have to run down to the last minute trying to get something done. The last, like, actual trade deadline deal I remember was the O.J. Mayo for Josh McRoberts trade that they filed too late and didn't actually go through. That was a classic.
Yeah, that's a big whoopsies there. And, I mean, O.J., obviously, you could argue the merits of McRoberts or McBob, as he is lovingly called in some circles. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, and we'll talk more about the trade deadline here in a moment, we'll get to the Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day. You know, there's winners and losers. And, you know, there's some teams who it seemed like they sort of waxed nostalgic trying to go back to the days of yesteryear with Tayshaun Prince returning to Detroit, which is good for him, although it sounds like he might get bought out, which is somewhat confusing. And then you also have, obviously, the big one being Kevin Garnett going back to Minnesota in a deal that I think Brooklyn just flat-out stole. They took advantage of Flip Saunders, I think. I'm a big Thad Young fan. That's an upgrade for Brooklyn. But, you know, a trade deadline with so much activity, Chris Faulkner said, and it's a quote from John Wooden, and I like it a lot, don't mistake activity for achievement. And it's a situation where there's a couple of teams, and we'll talk about them here in a moment, that got better today, but that doesn't necessarily mean everybody did just because a move was made.
Yeah, I mean, well, and I had to pull up the giant list of all the trades that were made. I'll get my SB Nation plug-in. It's the one by Mike Prada. It's on SBNation.com right now. And some of these trades I just don't understand, right? I mean, Michael Carter Williams to Milwaukee, Brandon Knight to Phoenix, and a first-round pick to the Sixers. Like, I just don't understand that move at all. Like, you just felt like you had to do something, so you just traded someone random for somebody else random. I mean, you're definitely right that there are winners and losers today. I look at the Thad Young KG trade. You know, I don't think I hate it as much as you do. I like Thad Young. I think he's a good player. But I think you could also make the case that, you know, he's not going to be part of the future there in Minnesota. They've got a lot of young players that are kind of starting to come together right now, and he's not that young. You know, he's not old, but he's not going to be in whatever, 4 or 5 years, whatever they're shooting for to be their date to take in 10. He's not going to be there then. So, you know, everybody has their reasons, right? That's the killer thing. Obviously, the most interesting move to the Grizzlies and Grizzlies fans is the Reggie Jackson deal that Oklahoma City made. People are talking about, like, this puts them in the finals or something. I'm not sure that it makes them that much better. I mean, explain to me how you think that trade makes Oklahoma City better.
Well, I think, and I agree with Matt Ardlicka, one of our other senior writers on the staff who I know you respect and talk to a good bit. He made the statement that he thinks they're an NBA championship favorite now. That might be a bit of a stretch, but I do think it makes Oklahoma City better because you have to respect multiple other players offensively. I guess maybe it comes along with how much you respect the game of Kyle Singler and Enes Kanter, who in all fairness is unproven. It's not like he was ever a truly dominant stud who took over games for the Utah Jazz. But if you subscribe to the theory that the Memphis Grizzlies got better solely because they exchanged Tayshaun Prince and Quincy Pondexter for Jeff Green, then it stands to reason that you could say, well, hell, the Oklahoma City Thunder just got a lot better because they replaced Kendrick Perkins with Enes Kanter. But at the same time, they lost Reggie Jackson, a guy who you could argue was kind of mismanaged in Oklahoma City, and they replace him with a DJ Augustine who can score the basketball. They bring in a Steve Novak and Kyle Singler who can shoot the three. Their offense should be more efficient, but there's a lot of moving pieces there that they have to try to fit together in the midst of a race for the 8th seed where, you know, Phoenix might have just parted with some of their players, but they, you could argue, got better today as well.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's my argument with Oklahoma City. I think that it makes them better. I just don't know that it makes them better fast enough for them to get dangerous. You know, I think what they're probably shooting for is to try to get into a 2-7 matchup with the Grizzlies. I think they think we've gone 7 games with these guys before. We can get some a Memphis series and take our chances, but they've got a lot of ground to make up to get to that 7 spot. You know, I just wonder if they can pull all those pieces together quickly enough. And it's really going to be a big test of Scott Brooks' coaching ability, as if we haven't seen enough of those. But, you know, I just think on paper it's a good trade. I'm not crazy about Enes Kanter. I think he's good. I don't think he's great. He's definitely better than Kendrick Perkins. Not many people are worse than Kendrick Perkins. But I just think in terms of defending the Grizzlies, Kenny Perkins actually made sense for them. When he was guarding Zach Randolph anyway, he could actually do that job fairly okay. And Kanter can't do that. We know from years of experience that Kanter can't. I don't know. I don't know what their end game is there. I think that it makes them better. I just don't know I don't know if it's going to matter because they're kind of fighting for their lives and how quickly can they pull that together.
It's going to be a challenge for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's any trade is a challenge, right? But the trade that I think kind of changes the West playoff race a little bit is this Aflalo deal with Aflalo and Alonzo G going to Denver for, like, spare parts, basically. Thomas Robinson, Will Barton, former Tiger, Will Barton. You know, that move is the kind of move that a team like Portland needed to make. They need a guy who can defend. They need a guy who can shoot. I thought that was a really smart move to kind of shore up their depth issues that everyone knows that they have. I really love the move that the Blazers made today.
And there was a question on Twitter, and we'll get to the Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day here momentarily. There was a question on Twitter that was posed to me about, well, you know, Portland lost a good bit of their depth in that trade. Obviously, Thomas Robinson gone, Victor Claver gone, and Will Barton, the former Memphis Tiger, as you mentioned, in addition to a couple of draft picks. But the interesting thing that you have to keep in mind is as teams get to the playoffs, those benches condense. Like, the Grizzlies are not going to be trotting out 11 and 10 guys every night once they get to a playoff series against, you would hope, you know, maybe the Los Angeles Clippers or Houston Rockets, Dallas Mavericks. You don't necessarily want to see Oklahoma City Thunder in that first round. You're not necessarily scared of them, but at the same time, that's not an ideal matchup, especially for a first round. So as you look at the layout of the West and you think about, okay, who do the Grizzlies match up well with and who does Portland match up well with, and in particular with the Trailblazers, you know, it's about those matchups and it's about opportunities to put yourself in better spots. The standings as of now, the Grizzlies and Portland, I would say, are probably the two favorites, with maybe a nod to Dallas after getting Amare, another example of upgrade just because he's taking minutes from somebody else. You know, those are the three teams that are really competing, in my opinion, for the 2 and 3 seeds in the West. I think the Spurs are going to get to the middle of the pack because they're healthy and they're the Spurs. I think Oklahoma City will outpace the Suns eventually. But that Aflalo deal really is remarkable in terms of when you look at their playoff roster. Now you've got their starting five, who you could put up with any starting five in the NBA, at least in my opinion. When it comes to Damian Lillard, you got Wesley Matthews, Nikola Batum, you've got LaMarcus Aldridge and Robin Lopez. Then you've got Steve Blake, you've got Chris Kaman, and you've got Aaron Aflalo coming off your bench. You know, that's a strong 8-man rotation, and then you throw in, depending on matchup, a Myers Leonard or somebody else. Portland doesn't necessarily need all those excess bodies, and it's going to be a chance for them to be able to trot out a pretty formidable rotation come playoff time.
Yeah, I think Portland is similar to the Grizzlies. I think Portland is really in win-now mode. Like, they have a window. They know it's closing. Aldridge is already playing through injuries. They know that this is their year. They have to basically convince him to stay there. You know, it's an all or nothing year for them too. And I think they needed to make a move like this. This is, you know, I did a Q&A with David Aldridge from NBA on TNT a couple of weeks ago. And we were talking about the Jeff Green trade, and he was like, you know, this is the kind of move that a team makes when they think that they really have a shot at winning it all. And I look at this Portland move, and I think that this is the same thing. You know, this is the kind of move that a team makes when they know that they just need that one more piece to shore themselves up for a run. I think that's exactly what Portland's doing. I think that's exactly I think it makes them dangerous.
Portland is a dangerous team. There's no doubt about that. We're talking with Kevin Leip of the Memphis Flyers Beyond the Arc blog. You guys also recently started a podcast that I've had a chance to listen to. It's pretty good. You and our buddy, our mutual friend, Phil Nasons, you guys are putting that podcast on. Do you want to tell folks about that show real quick before we keep moving forward here?
Yeah, it's just kind of early days. Phil and I have talked about doing that for a while, just kind of basically just recording ourselves rambling about the Grizzlies for about 30 minutes. And, you know, it's fun. It's not so many shows, you know, like this one. You have to find good guests every week, and Phil's a hard worker, but I'm way too lazy to actually track down that many guests. So it's just an opportunity for us to kind of talk basketball and a little bit of a laid back feel and just have some fun with it.
Well, damn, Kevin, I was hoping to be asked to be a guest someday, but now I know that it's not ever going to happen. So thanks for that. I appreciate that, Leip.
Well, you know, we may have guests. but it's not gonna.
Yes.
It's definitely not gonna be like an every week thing. Just purely because I'm too lazy. It's too much work.
Oh well, mine was purely just trying to get myself on another podcast. You know, I do Phil's show. I do this
yeah.
one. Let's see how many I can slide into. I'm just giving you a hard time. But make sure you're checking out the blog, obviously, Beyond the Arc from Memphis Flyer, and then also the podcast is a good listen. I've listened to the shows. They do a good job. Kevin sells himself short. It's classic, classy, higher level rambling. So make sure you're checking out that podcast. Now, Kevin, as you know, Grizzly Bear Blues Live here, the Twitter handle, at GBB Live. We tweet out a question of the day every day that we do the show. And the question today was for the folks, because as you said, if you measure the Grizzlies' Jeff Green deal, which was the major move, say you compare that and if they had gotten that done today, the question of the day was, as trading season ends, are the Grizzlies' trade deadline winners or losers? And let's see what some of the responses were. Our own Adam Rubrum, at A. Rubrum, who had a great article this week about the Grizzlies' bandwagon and jumping on it, says that the Grizzlies were winners. Golden State, Atlanta, and Memphis didn't make any moves because they have complete teams. I know the three-point shooter would have been nice, though. Tommy Duquesne, at 2Mill, says Grizz winner. Good job keeping the same roster that put us second in the West. No moves, same chemistry for the last 30 games in the playoffs. Then we also had a response from our very own Jonah Jordan. Winners didn't get rid of Kufos, at JMJ1757. Make sure you're following him there. And then, of course, Ian Jones, at ENWMJ, another one of our great listeners, tweets and says that the Grizzlies were losers. The Blazers got a whole lot better, like we talked about with Aflalo, and we kind of stayed put. So I'll put the question to you, Kevin, and then I'll respond. Do you think the Grizzlies were trading season winners or losers?
I think they're winners. You know, I think that making the move that they made and kind of even from just the standpoint of clarifying the rotation and taking two guys who are playing minutes and replacing them with one and, you know, guys who were not really contributing even at a replacement player level, to use a baseball term, and replacing them with Jeff Green, who is, you know, I don't think anybody would argue that he's a spectacular player, but he's a decent player, and replacing two guys who are a little sub decent with one decent guy, you're bound to make improvements. I mean, that's kind of, it's not on the same level as the Rudy Gay trade, where it was really kind of addition by subtraction. It's not that kind of thing. It's really basically like strengthening their one of their last remaining things that they could do without signing Ray Allen or whatever. I think they're winners. I mean, I think the fact that they had to give up that first round pick, honestly, the only thing I don't like about the trade. I think that 5 years from now or whenever that pick actually ends up going to Boston, the Grizzlies could be in pretty dire straits. You know, you could have a Marc Gasol at the end of his career, a Zach Randolph who's retired. You know, who knows? Anything could happen between now and then. And you really could find yourself in like a Brooklyn situation, right, where everything's kind of falling apart and you don't have any picks. Hopefully the coach is not Lionel Hollins, but, you know, whatever. But I still think it's a win. You know, I think if you're going to try to win the championship this year, and that's clearly that's what they're doing, everything that they've done all season long would indicate that they think this is the year. They know that they're all in on this year and kind of batten down the hatches. We're making a run at this thing. Then I think it's a great move. I think it's what they needed to do. And I think that given the trade market, as we saw today, I think you had to give up that pick to get a guy like Jeff Green. Whether Jeff Green would have warranted a first-round pick in the past or not, I think that's just the climate of the trade market this year. I think you gotta pay to play, and giving up that first round was the payment.
And those first-round picks are becoming increasingly hotter commodities, and this is probably one of the reasons why people are frustrated about giving them up, because of the fact that everybody knows the giant elephant in the room is that this salary cap is about to explode, maybe sooner rather than later, depending on how the Players Association and the owners come to agreements. And those rookie-level contracts are going to be very, very valuable here very soon, because you're going to have so much more space to work with. So people like having those first-round picks, but at the same time, if you look at the layout of these teams and the makeups of rosters that have won championships recently, these aren't the young, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed kids going out and winning NBA championships. It's folks that are older, that are experienced, that are veterans in this league that are going out and winning these titles, and the Grizzlies are in that boat now. You've got guys like Zach Randolph, Tony Allen, Marc Gasol is going to be 30. You are getting to the point where you're getting older in terms of the NBA, maybe not for the Earth, but for the NBA, you're starting to get up there in years, and you've got to make a push now. You can't worry about 2019. You have 2015 right in front of you, and a guy like Jeff Green, who is an athlete, who's able to score in transition, who gives you a different act or a different part of your game as a team that you hadn't had since Rudy Gay. Oh, and he has a lesser usage rate than Rudy Gay. So he's Rudy Gay, but he's not, and he gives you that athleticism that you had been sorely lacking. To me, I agree. I think the Grizzlies were winners in this trading season because they had to make a move. They did the best they could, and it's a situation where Jeff Green is not a perfect basketball player, but you know what? He certainly fits what this team needed in terms of athleticism and versatility. Maybe he's not Aaron Aflalo, but like you said, you had no idea that Aaron Aflalo was even going to be available. And who's to say that he wasn't one of the players called about that you mentioned? And who's to say that he or a Wilson Chandler, the price would have been different when the Grizzlies were interested in making a move than it was today? And you can only imagine that the value of those guys goes up as time goes on.
Well, and I think that the earlier you can make the move, the better, right? I mean, you need to give those guys time to get acclimated. And I think that giving Jeff Green a whole month before the trade deadline and before the All-Star break to get to Memphis and start playing on the team is only going to pay off in the playoffs. I mean, you know, it takes these guys time to fit into an offense and to fit in with players they've never played with before. And I think that the earlier you can make those kind of moves, the better. So I think that even if it was just about timing, that's still a plus for the Jeff Green trade. Now, I will say, we talked about winners and losers. I totally forgot that the Clippers somehow ended up with Austin Rivers out of all this. So I think that makes them losers.
Yeah, they've got to be the biggest losers here. And as we record this show live, I think we're being laughed at on Twitter, Kevin, which is kind of disappointing. But, you know, that's okay. I think they're winners, and you think they're winners, and Matt and Kevin Young can suck your left toe, that kind of situation. but anyway, as we move ahead and we look to what the Grizzlies can do, now the trading season's over, it's done, is what it is, whether you like the Jeff Green move or not. The first thing that needs to be improved upon is the three-point line, whether it be defending it, as I talked about with Chris Faulkner in the first segment, or converting from that three-point line. The Grizzlies were 29.4% shooting in 16 games with Jeff Green before the break. Is the Jeff Green presence there a coincidence? Is it partially because of Green that percentage is so low? Or is it a combination of things? Obviously, Mike Conley has been banged up. Courtney Lee hasn't been converting at as high of a rate as he had been earlier on in the season. But the Grizzlies were also 13-3 during those 16 games. How do you fix that three-point percentage issue, and do the Grizzlies even necessarily need to be successful?
I don't know if they need to. They certainly want to. I mean, Jeff Green is clearly not helping the three-point percentage. He's been pretty terrible from long range. And the only thing that he's been worse at than shooting those threes is his pull-up jumper, which is just, you know, Tayshaun's looked bad. Jeff Green's just looked ill-considered. You know, he's not a shooter. We knew that about him when they traded for him. He's not a shooter. Anybody who says that the Grizzlies traded for a shooter is not paying attention to the NBA. That's not why they traded for him. But they still have those issues, right? I think that Courtney Lee's disappearance has been a big part of it. I think the other issue that we kind of haven't even mentioned his name yet on the show is Vince Carter was supposed to be that guy for this team. He was supposed to be the shooter. And when he was on the court, he was definitely the shooter. He wasn't much of a maker, but he was a shooter. And guys respected him to an extent, but, you know, we saw that Dallas game on Martin Luther King Day. Vince Carter wasn't even being guarded. So I think that move, which was made to bring in shooting, just really didn't pan out. And whether Carter comes back or not, Grizzlies watchers have kind of been talking all season about, well, if Vince is in shape by the playoffs, then we won't worry about it. If he's in shape by the playoffs, we won't worry about it. Now we're sitting here looking like, is this foot thing even going to heal? Like, is he going to retire? What? How bad is it? And, you know, I think that that's a real question mark on the Grizzlies' kind of floor spacing and three-point ability and that kind of thing. He's really just that the Vince Carter thing, I think, just really hasn't panned out, and it really hasn't provided the lift in the three-point percentage that we thought it would. Now, Courtney Lee has kind of famously done a disappearing act the last couple of years, and he's kind of in the middle of that right now. He's not taking as many shots. They're not going in. You have to hope that he's getting it out of the way earlier this season and that he'll play his way through it and maybe come back close to his career averages by the end of the season. And even if he can just shoot at his career averages, I think it makes the Grizzlies a lot better team. So I'm not really worried about it. I definitely think that it's still an issue. And I think that it's an issue that was supposed to be at least halfway resolved by the signing of Vince Carter, and it hasn't been. But I don't think it's – I think they're still looking for a shooter. I think that they're still on the free agent market. But it bears watching, and you're going to see them probably sign somebody kind of into the bench guy. But I'm not losing sleep over it.
It's a situation where it would be a nice thing to have, but, you know, is it worth losing the versatility of a Nick Calathes on the wing as a defender and a guy who can defend multiple spots as a ball handler? Is it worth losing Kosta Koufos, who, even though he might be gone at the end of the season, if you're talking about a win-now move, he's probably one of the best, if not the best, bigs coming off the bench in the NBA. So it really is a situation where you had to weigh cost and reward, and the Grizzlies probably just didn't see it as worthy of that. We're finishing up here with Kevin Leip of the Memphis Flyers Beyond the Arc blog. Follow him on Twitter at FlyerGrizzBlog. That's Grizz with one Z. So make sure you're following Kevin if you don't already on Twitter. I will get you out of here on this, Kevin. The next 7 days, all right, so from Sunday, I should say, from the first game back Sunday until that next Saturday, the Grizzlies will have played 5 games in those 7 days. And between now and our next broadcast, next Thursday, they will have played 3. They've got Portland at Portland on Sunday. They've got the Clippers on a second game of a back-to-back on Monday night. That'll be without Blake Griffin, though. They've got the Sacramento Kings in Sacramento on Wednesday night. They play those same Los Angeles Clippers on Friday, so they're getting them at a good time with Blake Griffin out. And that'll be a home game Friday night. And then another back-to-back against Minnesota, who they lost to the last time they played in Minnesota against the Timberwolves. So you look at that stretch of games, it's kind of jumping out of the gate for sure for these Grizzlies post-All-Star break. Does this stretch of games tell us anything in particular about these Grizzlies? Is this a kind of a season-defining moment, or is it just something to say, well, hey, how are they going to start this post-All-Star stretch?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think the season-defining moment is going to be much later in the year, hopefully in June. I think that we need to look at the entire stretch run basically as a tune-up for the playoffs. And if they can come out and really take care of business, hang a loss on Portland, hang 2 losses on the Clippers, put some space between themselves and kind of the middle of the pack Western Conference teams, then that's what they need to do. But, you know, if they drop one or two of these, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. They really just need to make sure they stay in home court advantage for me to feel good about it, honestly. Avoiding any kind of matchup with the Thunder or the Spurs is a good idea. But, you know, it's every week in the NBA has the potential to be a season-defining week, depending on how you look at it. And so I think that while these are tough games, and you do play the Clippers twice without Blake Griffin, which is, you know, beneficial, and I think that home game is actually the one that they're giving out flip-flops at, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the flip-flop giveaway.
I love that they actually were able to pull that off. You know, it's a tough week of games, but it's not make or break to me.
I think I agree, and I'm with you on the fact that, you know, this is an opportunity for this team to continue to hold on to that 2 or 3 seed. You know, talking with Chris Faulkner in the last segment, you know, the Grizzlies really have an opportunity here if they're able to settle into that 2 or 3, and there's every reason to believe that they can do that. they're in a spot where they won't have to see the Oklahoma City Thunder, the San Antonio Spurs potentially, or the Golden State Warriors until a potential Western Conference final matchup. And that would just be huge. That would be another, I kind of compared it to the 2013 Western Conference Finals run, where they were in a position to make that run because of injury. This time, it's just, I guess in a roundabout way, it's because of injury with Oklahoma City. But it's a situation where the window might be opening for them to make another run at an NBA championship.
Yeah, they've never had a better chance than they have this year. The team is better than they've ever been. The conference is as wide open as I can remember it being. Some teams who are usually there are not there, and some teams that don't necessarily have that experience or are there, like the Warriors. You know, this is their shot, and I think that's why we've seen them tie it back to trade season, make the move that they make when they made it. You know, I think that they're locked and loaded, and they're going to use this stretch run to work out the remaining kinks and roll into the playoffs, expecting to at least get to the conference finals.
Kevin, thank you so much, as always, for coming on the show. You're always a welcome guest here, and we'll have to make sure we have you on again in the future as we get closer to the Grizzlies' playoff run.
Yeah, sorry I went on the Three Shades of Blue show.
That's okay, Kevin. That's okay. I understand. Those guys over at Three Shades of Blue, they're good guys. You wanted to do their show instead of mine. I get it. It's totally fine.
Well, you know, what can I say?
Thank you, Kevin.
Take care, man.
As always, I'll talk to you soon, bud.
You too, man.
All right. That was Kevin Light. Make sure you're following him on Twitter if you don't already, at Flyer Grizzblog. That's with 1Z. Make sure you're checking out the Beyond the Arc podcast that he does with our buddy Phil Nasons. He does a great job on that show. And make sure you're checking out his writing. He's one of the best writers out there in Grizz Nation and in writing in general. I enjoy reading his stuff. Him and Chris Harrington are among my must-reads in sports journalism. So make sure you're checking out Kevin's work at Beyond the Arc for the Memphis Flyer online. Our final guest this evening will be talking college basketball and how it relates to the Grizzlies. But before I get to that, I would like to give another shout-out to audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. Sign up today for an opportunity to get an audiobook download, a membership to audible.com, and using that download in a variety of ways, with the fee that you pay to become a member at audible.com, Grizzly Bear Blues Live gets an opportunity to make a donation to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Your fee will not be used to get me a cool new shirt or anything like that. It'll be used to have an opportunity to help out those in need at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee, a cause near and dear to our hearts here at GBB Live. So sign up once again, www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. Get yourself a great deal and help an even better cause. My next guest, been talking with them for a while, some enlightened guys in terms of the NBA draft. They have a really cool concept site that I'm going to invite you guys to check out. It's called Real Time Draft, and they're going to talk about the college basketball season at large, the Memphis Grizzlies, and how the draft picks in the future will lay out. There's been a lot of conversation about that in regard to the Jeff Green trade, and then some players that the Grizzlies could maybe find in that late first round that could help them in terms of perhaps a backup big, with Kosta Koufos possibly being gone in the offseason, or another wing scorer and shooter that could help out the Grizzlies as well. These are the brothers Real. This is Douglas and Joseph Real from Real Time Draft. Douglas, Joseph, how are y'all doing tonight?
Hey, we're doing pretty good. Actually, it's just Joseph with you this evening. Doug had a little bit of a family emergency, so sorry about that.
Oh, no, I'm sorry to hear that. Family comes first. That's totally good.
It does. Yeah, and speaking of family, I'd be remiss if I didn't begin Rip City's in mourning, as I'm sure everyone's aware, or maybe not, but Jerome Kersey, one of the all-time greats from some of the best teams in Trailblazer history. You know, our hearts go out to his family.
Absolutely. Same here with us. And Jerome Kersey, I live in Virginia, Joseph, didn't know if you knew that. But Mr. Kersey went to Longwood University, and he had a great career there before going to the Portland Trailblazers. So definitely heavy hearts and thinking of the Kersey family as things move on. Definitely a sad passing in terms of that. But we carry on, and as we look ahead to college basketball, you know, this is an opportunity. I'll be honest, I haven't watched a ton because of the NBA. It commands a lot of my free time.
Sure.
But when it comes to college basketball, one team that I do follow in particular is the Virginia Cavaliers. And ever since Tony Bennett arrived in Charlottesville, the Cavaliers have steadily increased and become a much better team to the point where they're number two in the country. Obviously, I know the Kentucky Wildcats have something to say about being one of the top teams in the land. But if you would, you know, our listeners here that are Grizzlies fans, mostly NBA listeners and watchers, but what are some of the kind of, you know, highlights of college basketball so far? And as conference tournaments start up here in the next couple of weeks, who are some teams that you're keeping an eye out and going into March Madness?
You know, I mean, I think that Virginia, as you mentioned, I mean, it's no mystery as to why they're back on the national scene from a, you know, a highly ranked, highly thought of team going into, you know, conference tournaments, going into March Madness. It starts at the top with the head coach. And, you know, you get the discipline, increase focus on defense. And, you know, I think that they're going to be a major player going into the heavy portions of the season and going into March. I think that Gonzaga has one of the more, you know, deeply talented squads in the country. I've got my eye close on them, given my geographical proximity. So I think that, you know, I'll admit a little bit of bias there. You know, they are a fun squad to watch. And if you haven't had a chance to catch them yet, I would highly recommend that. But Kentucky, you know, I mean, it's hard to ignore, you know, the highly disruptive force that is their defense, and I think that you know, it begins and ends with Kentucky, in my opinion, from a strictly talent perspective. And you know, defense, in my opinion, is an often sadly overlooked trait that tends to play out rather heavily come tournament season, because you got a little bit of unfamiliarity with certain teams, and you know, you never come up against a defense like Kentucky's got. So if I were a betting man, I'd say, you know, watch out for Kentucky.
They're talented, and when you have that many McDonald's All-Americans, I know that they do the two platoon system with Coach Calipari there. Even though Memphis fans aren't necessarily the biggest fan of John Calipari, he's a hell of a recruiter, a darn good basketball coach, and the Kentucky Wildcats are the team to beat heading into the conference tournaments and, of course, March Madness.
Absolutely, and when you've got a guy like, who I'll touch upon in just a second later in this segment, when you got a guy like Trey Lyles, who, you know, is almost an afterthought on your front court, you know you've got a good situation.
No doubt. Once again, we're talking with Joseph Real. Make sure you're following Real Time Draft on Twitter at Real Time Draft and check out realtimedraft.com. And Joseph, if you would please just give our listeners kind of a rundown of what you folks do over there in terms of the NBA draft.
Yeah, absolutely. What we do is we provide a completely unique interactive environment on the web for the amateur basketball scout. So if you have ever found yourself, you know, ranking, scouting, or the top prospects for the NBA draft, I highly encourage you to, you know, join our community of talented amateur basketball scouts who just want to have their opinion heard by the masses, whether that be you know, the teams themselves, the peers, you know, amongst the scouts, amateur scouts. You know, I think it's just a great, the website's a great tool for aggregating those opinions and putting it into a powerful, unified voice so that we kind of get a pulse of where the fans, where the amateur scout stands at any given point in time on the top prospects in the draft. So the site basically takes the opinion of the masses and then averages it in real time. So as the opinions are morphing during the college and European seasons, you see that reflected on the site. So it's a great tool. All the things that the amateur scout needs, whether it's statistics, videos, chat rooms, there's everything there that they will need to develop their opinions on the prospects during the season.
It really is a pretty cool site. I'm on there right now as we speak, and I've checked it out leading into our segment here tonight. And you guys got an awesome countdown, you know, 125 days away from the draft. And, you know, you see these guys, these names that maybe folks aren't following as closely right now because we're so ingrained in the NBA season. But at the same time, you know, there's scouting departments and there's organizations who are looking right now. And then on a day like today with the trade deadline, so many draft picks are being swapped left and right that, you know, these are guys that are directly impacted by these moves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Today's movements from a draft perspective were rather shocking. But, you know, I think that getting into kind of segueing a little bit into the Grizzlies too, you know, I think that, and I forgive me, and you could tell me right now, I didn't follow towards the end of the day there whether Memphis still has their first round pick this year.
They do. It's
they
a situation
do. Okay.
where there's a lot of protections on it. It depends on whether it's protected one through five or a certain situation where they'll be able to. They traded it away, but it's heavily protected.
Heavily protected. Okay. Yeah. I mean, as far as Memphis and any late first round selection, to be honest with you, I'm actually highly optimistic about those teams in particular landing somebody that is going to bring value. I really love the late first round, early second in this draft. I actually like the late first round from a value perspective more than I like some of the late lottery, late teens guys, to be honest with you. So, I mean, from a Memphis Grizzly fans perspective, pretty encouraged as to where they stand in the draft.
Yeah, and it's going to be protected 15 through 30. The Grizzlies are currently in that spot. So basically, as long as they didn't land between 6 and 14, that middle to late lottery, the Grizzlies were going to have this pick in 2015. It will eventually be sent to the Denver Nuggets. This pick was sent from Cleveland to Denver as a part of the Timothy Mozgov trade. But the Grizzlies should
gotcha.
Have it this year. It'll probably go to 2016. And it's a situation for the Grizzlies. They're going to need some help. And there's going to be a couple of spots in particular that our fan base, as time goes on, says, you know, we could probably use some help there. There's, you know, a lot of value, like you said, and there's some names that really popped out at me as I was doing research for this segment in terms of two positions in particular where I think the Grizzlies are going to have an interest. First off would be a big. Kosta Kupos is a guy who's more than likely going to be gone for the Memphis Grizzlies next year. He's going to sign some lucrative free agent contract, you would imagine, probably to be a starting center somewhere in the NBA. And then also, the Grizzlies could also use wings, taller, longer wings, or maybe even, you know, a 6'6 kind of guy who can shoot the basketball. Vince Carter was supposed to be that guy this year, as we talked about in the last segment. Didn't necessarily come through, at least he hasn't yet. So as we look at this Grizzlies roster, they could use a wing who can score the ball from range, and they could use a big. Who are some names that Grizzlies fans could kind of start doing a little bit of extra research on, even before the next game for the Grizzlies Sunday in Portland? Some guys that maybe as March Madness heats up that they could keep an eye on as potential draft picks later on in the summer.
Absolutely. And, you know, I first want to disclaimer some of my pronunciations on names because some of these guys are foreigners, so hopefully you get the picture. And your listeners can get down to who I'm talking about. But I couldn't agree more looking at the depth chart, looking at the salaries that you guys, salary commitments that the Grizzlies have. I think big is a natural point of emphasis. And luckily, I love the late first and early second from a big perspective. One of my favorites from overseas is a Frenchman by the name of Mahamadou Jaita. 6'11", 255. He would be a sophomore if he was in the college basketball world. And in my opinion, if he was in the NCAA, we wouldn't be having this conversation because he would not be available in the late first. So I think that from a purely value perspective and, you know, I mean, depending on how free agency shakes out, he could be a draft and stash option. So that's another thing to keep in mind. I did mention Trey Lyles earlier. I think that he will probably, if he does declare from Kentucky, he's 6'10", got a really long wingspan, 7'3", you know, he multi-talented, you know, comfortable on the drive, moves and drives like a guard, kind of like a poor man's Blake Griffin, in my opinion, nowhere near the fast twitch. Not quite as explosive as an athlete, but just from a ball skills perspective and pretty rare for a 6'10", 7'3 span guy to operate and just function the way that he does. So I think that if he does declare, he will likely go higher than people realize. So, you know, just somebody to look for if he were to slide to the late first to Memphis. I think that you pull the trigger there, even though he might not be, you know, the center that you're looking for. But there's a another player, University of Washington. This would be the traditional backup five that might fill a need. This would be Upshaw. So Robert Upshaw, 6'11", long wingspan, a little bit limited from an athletic perspective, but he makes up for that with a natural ability to block shots. I also looked at the roster, and, you know, a big is absolutely necessary, but I think just if you wanted to drill down for Memphis, it'd be nice to get a little bit more rim protection, in my opinion. So, you know, from a traditional shot blocking perspective, he shows innate ability to, you know, maintain physical separation from the opponent, but to go up top, meet the ball up top, and reject those opportunities from the offense. You know, as I mentioned, a little bit more limited physically, though, doesn't bring some of the potential that a Jaita or a Lyles brings. There's a Lithuanian big man, 6'11"-ish, somewhere in that area, equally built as Jaita, so a very physical player by the name of Arturis Gudiatis. I think that he's going to be a guy that rises on individuals' boards here as we get closer to the draft, especially as we enter into combines and Euro camps, those sorts of things. Incredibly athletic. They're by far the singular most impressive moment that I saw as I watched film during my prep for this draft has been from this individual, and that's Gudiatis. A traffic dunker, an in-traffic rebounder, easily top two shot blocker in the draft from just a instincts and physical capabilities perspective. So somebody to keep an eye on. And then the final big man would be Guillermo Hernanen Gomez, a Spanish prospect, 7-footer, a little bit slow twitch, not the most incredibly explosive athlete, but he is a skilled big man. It kind of reminds, to be honest with you, a very poor man's Marc Gasol. He takes up a lot of space, and he's got, in my opinion, room to grow as an athlete. He's carrying a little bit of baby fat, and if he trims down in an NBA training situation, I think he could become a little bit better of an athlete. But he's got some polishing to do in the low post offensively. He just doesn't. He's not quite there from a skill perspective yet. He's his only post move that I can decipher at this point is just spinning off contact and trying to finish over the top. So he's going to have a little bit of a learning curve, but he does bring a very unique combination of size and agility, much in the way that Mark does. So somebody to kind of keep an eye on. I don't think he'll end up going late first, but if you don't like what else is there, he's not a bad option. And you did mention, you know, wing players. I didn't really focus on there because I really do honestly believe that late first, the best value that you're going to see there is with the bigs. And I think that it did fit a very strong need, as you mentioned. But there is an individual, Timothy Lawalu. He's a 6'6 wing from Europe. And I think that he's definitely worth a look from a bigger guard, kind of a 2-3 option. Definitely not the prototypical knockdown shooter that, you know, you had mentioned that might be a need. But, you know, to kind of fit your point there, maybe if you get lucky, Sam Decker slides down. You know, it depends on who else declares, you know, the Trey Lyles of the world. So, you know, if I was a Grizzlies fan and I wanted Decker because of his shooting prowess combined with his athleticism, and, you know, I think he's a known commodity with most people out there. If you wanted folks like him to slide down, you should really hope that a lot of, you know, one-and-doners declare, much in the way that Trey Lyles might.
Once again, we're talking with Joseph Real. Make sure that you are following at Real Time Draft on Twitter, at Real Time Draft, especially as we get closer to the draft day of June. time carries on, obviously, but at the same time, it's important to take a look at these guys early, kind of get a feel, especially as college basketball in particular kicks into high gear. It's good to have an idea of who's out there. And then, of course, the European players are becoming so much more a part of the game in the NBA. You know, John Hollinger is a guy who is widely respected amongst Grizzlies fans, analytic mind. He worked for ESPN, and now he's in the Grizzlies front office. And it's widely assumed and kind of known that he really has a strong hand in the drafting process. The analytical metric style of Hollinger really benefits the Grizzlies when it comes to analyzing and critiquing these European players who maybe you don't have as much film on, but you can get access to statistics, you can get an idea for what kind of player they are from an advanced metric standpoint, and you can get a steal. Maybe you buy a second-round pick like they did this past year in a roundabout way for Jarnell Stokes. Maybe you do that again this year and get one of those European players that maybe you can stash for a year or two if necessary and bring them over. So some great points on some of those bigs. And I especially like the very poor man's Marc Gasol comparison. That was pretty good. Now, going with the wings, all right, Sam Decker, I really like that pick. I'm hoping he falls, but he'd have to fall a pretty long ways. The Grizzlies will probably be in the 25, 26, 27, 28 even-ish pick range for this draft. But as I look at your guys' big board as it stands right now, you know, some names that I've noticed that are wings in particular that I've heard people talk about in relation to the Grizzlies and other areas, you know, Aronde Hollis Jefferson of Arizona, you know, people like him a lot. They think he's a great defender, kind of in that Grizzlies grit and grind mindset. But at the same time, he's not the best scorer and shooter. The Grizzlies could use that. But then the name right below that, and I have to admit, I get excited because I'm a University of Virginia Cavalier fan, Justin Anderson, if he were to declare, you want to talk about a freakish athlete who can shoot the basketball, it'd be pretty sweet if Justin Anderson was there for the Grizzlies later in the first round.
Yeah, it makes sense from a big guard perspective, stretches the floor. You know, it's hard to argue with that being, you know, with that not being a great fit. So I completely agree with you there. You know, the Rondae Hollis Jefferson shout out, I'm definitely not the biggest fan, to be honest with you. You know, I think he's a little overrated. I think that, you know, as you get to the later first, people will look at him just from a, you know, can he come in and fill that defensive role? Sure. But to me, I want to see a little bit more dynamic ability from a guy that I draft. And actually, the individual, Luwawu, from I believe he's a Frenchman, so I apologize if I'm wrong on that. But Timothy Luwawu, in my opinion, is one of the better defensive prospects in the draft. So I mean, it just depends on what you're looking for. You know, I mean, if they need that Swiss Army knife that's going to go out there and, you know, defend multiple positions, you know, I really liked him a lot too, but he brings a little bit more to the table offensively than Rondae Hollis.
I think that's probably fair. And then one name that I want to throw out at you, and I promise I'm not trying to stump you. I, once again, just kind of doing my own little research into the matter here. This is a guy who is intriguing to me because he's tall, he's long, he's a freakish athlete, and he's kind of falling under the radar right now, I think, that could maybe be there for the Grizzlies that could really help, is a young kid by the name of Malik Pope, San Diego State. He's 6'10". He's shooting the lights out from beyond the arc. He's got a great range. He's got great length and athleticism. He's a kid who is kind of slow and underneath, but at the same time, you know, this is a kid who has a lot of physical ability who could maybe help the Grizzlies and solve and check off a lot of the needs on their list when it comes to needing a bigger wing who can shoot the ball from range.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, my brother Douglas Real, co-founder of Real Time Draft, we're big fans of Malik Pope. San Diego State actually has done a remarkable job from a recruiting standpoint. They've got a lot of talent that came in this year. They continue to do so. So, you know, we like him a lot. I do actually believe that earlier in the season he was out, I believe, due to injury. So I know that might be an oversight on our site, because actually, as you brought up his name, it reminded me that we did have him on there as a listed prospect, but I believe we were waiting to put him back on until he started playing. So my apologies to our subscribers on Real Time Draft. I'll get him up there immediately. But yeah, he's an unbelievable athlete who shows budding skill set. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if he will declare. I think that he'll be a question mark, and he'll be one of those guys that, you know, he'll be faced with that very hard decision. You know, do you be a one and done and you know, take that risk of developing, you know, maturity in your game and developing your game in the pros versus, you know, kind of taking your time and doing so in college? That's a personal decision, of course, but Malik Pope, as an end of the first round, he definitely would be a good person to take a flyer on, you know, if you believed in his potential, which based on just watching video on the guy, there's all the reason in the world to believe that he's got a high ceiling.
Well, and there's no reason, and I, like I said, I didn't mean to stump you, and it certainly isn't a stumping, because as I've looked around just kind of for that sleeper kind of pick that'll go into my last question for you here in a moment, Pope would be my sleeper, and he's a guy that some folks are high on and others aren't because of that raw potential. You know, he's very raw, and there's a lot of question about whether or not he would benefit from staying in college another year or maybe even two because of that raw ability. So you're certainly fine there. I was intrigued by his length and his ability to shoot the ball. But, you know, he's a guy that if he could most certainly stay. We'll get you out of here on this, Joseph, and thank you again for joining us. We appreciate it. Give me one sleeper, okay, and it can be a guy that maybe you already mentioned, one of the bigs in particular perhaps that you're passionate about, or maybe another wing, didn't even necessarily need to be for the Grizzlies, that could be a sleeper in this draft. People will look back 5 years from now and say, wow, I can't believe this team, probably the San Antonio Spurs, given the history of things, can't believe they got that guy, what an animal he is, what a stud for where they got him, so maybe a sleeper, and then another guy who could potentially be a bust in this draft. And granted, I understand it's the middle of February, still some time here for things to shift and change. I'm not going to hold you to all this, but just some early feelings, because you watch a lot more of these guys than we do. Who's a potential sleeper and who's a potential bust?
You know, as for the sleeper, I'll take that one first, because, you know, to be honest with you, as an amateur scout myself, you know, I take a lot of pride in trying to find that diamond in the rough. You know, I've been a huge fan of Jayta, Mahamadou Jayta out of France, been a huge fan of him. I think that I stand by my comment earlier. If he was in the NCAA, you know, we'd be talking about a lottery guy. So I think that he's a legitimate sleeper, seen as, you know, the quote-unquote experts, you know, tend to put him in the second round. So I think that qualifies, you know, you're getting lottery talent, in my opinion, you know, in the second round. And then also there's a Serbian point guard who's currently on no one's radar, which baffles me. So this is my true sleeper pick, because he is off the radar. It would be Nenad Meljenovic. He's 6'4", 200 pounds, pure point guard as they come. He's currently averaging right around 14 points and 8 assists a game in Europe. You know, second best leagues as compared to the NBA. You know, younger kid, he's 21 years old, so he'd be a, you know, a junior, senior, if he was in college. And I'm just baffled as to how he's off people's radar. So he's somebody that I think that a San Antonio late, I would look for late in the second round, San Antonio making a deal or using one of their picks, if they have it, to snag him. And I think that you look back 2-3 years from now and, you know, he's got a nice career and you just shake your head, you know, why didn't anybody else see that? As for busts, I'm going to go against the trend here. I'm going to shock, you know, everybody listening and potentially yourself. Instead of bust, I'm going to recategorize your question. And I'm going to say disappointment potentially. And the reason I change it is that, in my opinion, contrary to, I think, the majority of people out there, I think that if D'Angelo Russell is drafted in the top five, I think he will be if he's drafted 1 through 5, I think that relative to that draft selection, he will be a disappointment. I don't see a 1 through 5 pick, given what the other prospects that I see in this draft. I think that you will put too much expectation on him in that position, that draft position, and he will end up disappointing, in my opinion.
Interesting. And that is a name that has really gone and shot up draft boards lately because of his play at Ohio State. But at the same time, Ohio State has had some struggles as a team this year. I could see that. I don't think it's as crazy as you maybe think it might be. Some people will disagree with that, for sure. But I think that you're on to something there, especially the top five thing. Maybe even a late lottery pick. But Russell is a guy that could certainly maybe not live up to lofty expectations. This really is an awesome site, Joseph. I've really enjoyed checking it out, and we're going to make sure that we have you on again as we get closer to the draft, taking a closer look at these guys and see maybe they've gone up the board, down the board. It'll be interesting to see where the Grizzlies fit as we look to June. Thank you so much for coming on, Joseph. Really appreciate it, and we'll make sure that folks check out realtimedraft.com. I'm going to make my own personal draft board probably this weekend.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Thank you again, Joseph. Once again, that was Joseph Real. Follow them on Twitter at RealTimeDraft. RealTimeDraft.com is where you can check out the site. It really is a pretty nifty site. You should go check it out. It's interactive. You can click on the name, and it sends you to a link to the video and stats. You can put your own rankings as you come up with the amateur scouting philosophy of these guys. It really is cool. They give you a lot of tools to develop and have a better understanding of what these prospects look like heading into the NBA draft in June. So wanted to give that a shout out during this this All-Star week. Very appreciative to Joseph for coming on to the program. You are listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax, and we are wrapping up this evening's program, this trade deadline All-Star break ending show. Exciting for it to be over. I miss the Grizzlies a pretty good bit. I enjoy watching the NBA at large. And not having it on, you know, the All-Star game kind of counts, I guess. But when your final score in your All-Star game is 163 to 158, hard to really qualify that as a true basketball game for me. So I didn't even necessarily watch the game, to be honest with you. I saw Marc Gasol and Pau Gasol tip at the beginning. That was pretty cool. And then I went with SNL 40, and I think I made the right decision. But the Grizzlies are back this Sunday night against the Portland Trail Blazers. I'm excited. Hopefully you are as well, as we head into the future for these Grizzlies. And that was the focus of tonight. We took a reflection back on the trade deadline, and then we looked ahead to the schedule at large, how these Grizzlies can improve and get better for the stretch run, and then obviously the NBA draft in June, something that, believe it or not, people are taking a look at already, and as well they should be taking a look. Got to get an idea of scouting for what the future of the NBA and of the Memphis Grizzlies in particular will be. I would like to thank my guest this evening. First off, Chris Faulkner, great guest in the first segment as always in Grizzly Bear News. Talked a good bit about the Grizzlies and their All-Star break happenings and the articles that went up on grizzlybearblues.com this week. Make sure you're checking out the site for all of those great articles and roundtables and the reply all chat that I'm having with Matt Ardlicka as we speak. That'll go through Sunday, so make sure you're checking that out heading in to the Grizzlies' first game back. Thanks to Kevin Leip of Beyond the Arc, the Memphis Flyer blog, for joining me. Always good talking to Kevin, talking about winners and losers at the trade deadline, kind of looking ahead to what the Memphis Grizzlies will be this season, this next five-game stretch. It's going to be a big one. They'll play three of those five between now and the next time we're on the Blog Talk Radio airwaves. And once again, thanks to Joseph Real of RealTimeDraft.com. Enjoyed having him on, knowledgeable guy. Lots of good names to keep an eye out for, especially in Europe. And again, as the metric movement, analytics, whatever you want to call it, as that continues to become more prevalent in the NBA, guys like John Hollinger and those number systems, it really helps in terms of evaluating that foreign talent that is becoming more and more of a part of the NBA game. So that's going to be really interesting to watch, and we'll make sure to have Joseph Real back on the show in the future. Next week, Thursday, February 26th, same time, 6:30 Central. We will be back on the Blog Talk Radio airways for another installment of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Our guest that evening will be Ben Hogan of 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis's Eric Hasseltine Show. Ben's been a guest multiple times on this program. We're excited to have him back on. We'll talk about the Grizzlies at large, how they looked in their first few games back from the break. So we're excited to have Ben back on the program. And then we'll also have Craig Fielder of GrizzlyBearBlues.com. He does the very popular View from the Enemy, Behind Enemy Lines segment on the site. People have really gotten into that. He did a guest segment on Cerrito Live on Sports 56 WHBQ Memphis recently, talking about that that part of the site that he does for us, that great article setup. So we'll talk to him about that. We'll talk to him about what it's like being a Grizz fan overseas across the pond, as they like to say. I can't wait to use that next week, see if it frustrates him or not. We'll have Chip Williams back as well, which will be great. We missed Chip tonight, but obviously we'll have him back, we hope, and it'll be an opportunity for us to get back together and talk Grizzlies once again. That's next Thursday. We'll have Ben Hogan and Craig Fielder as our guests. Make sure you're checking out www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. Get a great audiobook download deal, and also help us support St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. Make sure you're on the lookout for the podcast version of the show. If you missed the live recording, you can listen to the archived podcast at any time, whether it be via grizzlybearblues.com. The articles or the recap of the show goes live the next day. So Friday, the show recap will be up. And I also tweet out the link multiple times in the coming days to the archive podcast. You can check it out that way as well if you were not able to listen to the live broadcast. Once again, thank you to my producer, Chip Williams, who wasn't able to be with us tonight, but here in spirit. Thank you to my guests, Chris Faulkner, Kevin Leip, and Joseph Real of RealTimeDraft.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Grizzlies basketball is going to be back in just a few short days. Make sure you're making GrizzlyBearBlues.com your place, your stop for all Memphis Grizzlies content. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, it has been a pleasure. Grind forth, Grizz Nation. The stretch run is here. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live.